Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's January the 7th, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, FDA may declare meat and milk from cloned animals safe to eat. ADM says it will store waste CO2 underground, and the Farm Bill negotiators are still working out details of that legislation. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later in the half hour, and then I'll tell you about aphid-resistant soybeans. Hey, and don't forget that at the bottom of the hour, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast. It all comes up on this edition of the Closing Market Report.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agricultural Director Dave Dickey. Join us this evening at the Central Citizens Library District building in Clifton, Illinois, for another one of our free AM 580 Agricultural Outlook panels. The panel gets underway this evening at 7 o'clock. Panelists include Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing, Mike Georgie of Allendale, and Paul Cooley of ADM Investment Services. Also on board will be AM 580 Chief Meteorologist Ed Kieser. That's at the Central Citizens Library District building in Clifton, Illinois. The meeting gets underway at 7 o'clock. It is free and no advance registration is required. We hope to see you there.
Taking a look now at the settlement prices in Chicago at the Mercantile Exchange and the Board of Trade on a Monday afternoon. Futures like this in the wheat pit, the soft red at 903, settled down 28.5 for the March contract. May futures down 28.75 at 9.15.75, and July at $8.04, down 13.25 for the day. March corn futures at $4.66, down a half. The May down a half at $4.77. And July corn at $4.87, down 3/4. December contract $4.85 3/4, down 1. January soybean futures $12.36, down 13 cents. The March at $12.49 3/4, down 12 3/4. And the May futures at $12.68.5, down 11 cents. November beans $11.67.5, 6 3/4 higher for the day. January soybean meal futures at $3.37.90, down $4.10. The March down $3.80 at $3.44.50. January bean oil at $50.20, down 35. March bean oil 43 lower at $50.75. Live cattle futures February contract $94.60. A nickel higher. April futures at $97.35, up 40. January futures in the feeder cattle pit at $100.42.5, a dime higher. The March contract up 35 cents at $103.70. Lean hog futures February contract $55.70, down 70 cents. The April futures 45 lower at $61.45. And the May lean hogs at $68.20, down 72.5 cents on the afternoon. Outside markets, February crude oil futures at $95.10 a barrel, down $2.81 at the hour, and the March contract at $94.50 last trade, down $3.19. The U.S. dollar trading at 76.169, up 0.247 for the day, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 12,756. It is just about 44 points lower on the afternoon.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Afternoon, Todd.
Well, it's been a kind of a fun start to the new year for 2008. We've been all over the board, up primarily, but we've got a down day today.
Boy, what a roller coaster. Talk of the fund indexes increasing their investment in the commodities of upwards $40 to $50 billion coming in, which was interpreted to be buying. That's probably what gave us support here as we went into year end, the first of the year. And all of a sudden, the trade's talking about rebalancing the portfolios and selling. So, one extreme to the other is going to be quite a roller coaster, but the trade is watching the commodity funds very closely. They seem to be movers and shakers. Funds, the index funds, are long about 185,000 contracts of beans and about 370,000 contracts of corn, just the index funds. Then the funds are estimated to be net long beans, about 130,000 contracts, and net long corn about 250,000 contracts. So they've got a lot of purchasing and selling power, which is going to keep this market quite active as we go into the growing season of 2008.
If you had to guess what the rest of this week would look like, will it be up or down?
Probably a little bit of both, to be honest with you. The key is to probably watch near today's lows, the March corn around the 460 area, diesel 8 corn around 480. Take these January beans, probably 1245, and these new crop November beans around the 1150 area. Are probably going to be key support levels. The market's technically overbought. We're starting to get a little bit of divergence activity on the short-term momentum indicator. So failure to hold those levels could put us in a little bit more of a corrective phase. But corrections in here are still going to be bought due to the optimism as we go down the road, especially towards the end of the week as we get a handle on the USDA supply-demand report, Todd.
And that one is due out Friday. Let's go back to a term that you came up with, a corrective phase. That means that most of the traders, I suppose, are still thinking this is a friendly to a bullish market.
Pretty much so. You know, from a longer-term point of view, with, you know, as long as the economy can hold together, not only here in the U.S., but Asia, you know, as long as energy values stay high, as long as we see uncertainty as we go into 2008, such as acreage and weather, there's some fairly wide ranges what to expect. You know, traders have corn in a range of anywhere from $3.25 clear up to $6. This bean trading range can be anywhere from $7.50 to $17. So there's some wide expectations out there, a lot of uncertainty when you look at option volatility. It's extremely high. They're about twice the price than they were a year ago. However, though, the value of the grain is over twice the price it was a year ago. So got to take that in correlation. But probably the supply-demand report Friday will be the next indicator to give the market some direction to go by other than South American weather.
What numbers will you be watching in particular from that report?
Well, probably the interesting thing will be old crop. It'll give us an idea what to look for. The trend is a tighter old crop number. Corn carryouts expected to drop 100 to 150 million bushel on better than expected demand. There's some talk that maybe they could lower yield a little bit. So, you know, we'll see where we are on old crop. If you go ahead and take away about 6 million acres and take corn yield up to 158 bushels an acre, this 08 carryout down the road, it won't be on this report, could be tight. One to watch as the trade's expecting maybe, you know, upwards of 900 million bushel carryout. That's going to support old crop. Thing in the beans would be a drop in carryout of about 5 to 10 million bushel, just higher exports. Bean demand remains strong. Old crop carryout could drop to this 175 bushel area. And the thing is, when we get down and get the acres in March and see our first crop report later this spring, the trade's anticipating a very tight carryout number for the 2008 crop. When you carry that 175 million bushel carryout in a new crop, and if you don't get 6 to 7 million acres, the 08 bean carryout could be as tight as 25 million bushels, Todd.
Yeah, given that, when we take a look out at what we've got in the way of trade a little further out into the 09 trading year, the beans haven't been as active, although they're high, but corn's pushed. I was looking at July 09 today, and it bumped up above $5 as we get into the summer of 09. That would be trading off, of course, that very small carryout from 08, under a billion bushels at 800 or 900 million you were suggesting. Is that an opportunity, do you suppose, for producers, or do they just need to sit at the sidelines and watch it all?
Well, that's a good question, and we feel it's a scale-up selling approach. We're concerned that this market can grind higher, but when it turns, it can grind lower, and we might not get that recovery bounce to get the job done. If you look at who owns the market, it's the speculator. And when the speculator wants to give up, you know, they'll give up. For example, what I mean by that is Secretary in L.A. is not going to take delivery of 5,000 bushels of corn. So, you know, the question is, you know, when will the thing go the other way? So as a producer or a trader, you don't know. So as a producer, I think you got to use a scale-up approach. The other thing is some type of put strategy to put a floor under you. You know, you can put a 440 floor under you and hope it's wrong. You know, 2 years ago, you'd given anything to lock in 440, and that's possible doing it through the options.
Yeah, let me ask one more question about that, and then we'll let you go for the afternoon. Many producers will look to the month of February and then, of course, to crop insurance once they get to March to put that floor under them. Are there reasons not to do that? Or to do both, I guess, is the question.
You could probably do some type of strategy here, you know, scale up and get more aggressive in February once we know what the insurance program has to offer. One thing to do is get some minimum price now, so in case we do get a bearish trend here, we don't lose out on what we've gained so far. You know, it varies from individual to individual, but that's the main train of thought, is get through February and see what the revenue policies have to offer. I don't think we'll see a dollar down in corn or $2 or $3 down in beans before that, because the trade's going to be anxious to see what the acreage is as we go into the March 31st report.
Yeah, and we still have, we get through February, but we have the big report in the end of March that the trade will be looking forward to. So the expectations will still be built into the marketplace.
Yeah, to what degree? But, you know, the thing is, we just don't want to get caught seeing this market go down and say, well, we'll wait for a retracement or a rebound. It's sort of like a 70s type style market. And those are dramatic charts. It's straight up for a year or two and straight down for a year or two. And it's back to the point of where it started from. And you know, years ago, you would say $3 was a heck of a sell. Well, right now, we don't want to see $3. So, you know, there's some considerable downside risk if the market would turn the other way.
Kurt, we appreciate you being with us today.
Very good. Thanks.
Kurt Kimmel is with Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Monday afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like from our own Ed Kieser. He says a flood watch is in effect for most of northern Illinois from this evening through tomorrow afternoon, and for most of northern Indiana from this evening through tomorrow evening. Tonight, Ed says, in the north, skies will be cloudy. There'll be rain, locally heavily at times. Elsewhere, cloudy, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Lows will range from around 40 in the far northwestern parts of Illinois to about 60 in the far south. Tomorrow in northern Illinois, cloudy and turning cooler with periods of rain elsewhere. Cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Highs will range from around 40 in northwestern Illinois to 67 in the far south. Here's Dave with the news.
In agricultural news, the Food and Drug Administration is expected this week to declare that meat and milk from cloned animals is safe to eat. But it could be 3 years or longer before milk from cloned animals enters the food chain. The food industry remains divided on the issue. Officials at Dean Foods, one of the nation's largest milk producers, say it will not sell any milk from cloned animals. But the American Meat Institute Foundation, which represents companies like Smithfield Foods and Hormel, thinks consumers might come to appreciate cloned animals when they find larger and leaner cuts at the grocery store. Archer Daniels Midland is teaming up with the Illinois State Geological Survey to store carbon dioxide from its Decatur ethanol plant underground rather than release the gas into the atmosphere. Carbon dioxide will be stored in the tiny spaces of porous rock deep below the Earth's surface. The project is designed to confirm the ability of Mount Simon Sandstone to accept and store 1 million tons of carbon dioxide over a 3-year period. The U.S. Department of Energy is funding the bulk of the project with a $66.7 million grant. Behind the scenes, farm bill negotiations are continuing. Jonna Miller's with the AFBF, and she has this report.
Congress won't be back in session until later this month, but that doesn't mean nothing is happening with the farm bill.
Certainly staff are working on the differences between the House and the Senate version of the farm bill and trying to limit those to the really big issues for when the members come back. We're talking about one bill that's 1,600 pages and another bill that's 500 pages, so obviously there's a lot of differences in those bills.
American Farm Bureau Farm Policy Specialist Mary Kay Thatcher believes payment limits will be a big issue.
We've heard a lot over the last few years about Scottie Pippen and his getting funds, and we thought we resolved that in the 2002 bill. But in essence, we didn't, because he wasn't getting farm program payments. He was getting conservation payments. And so there's a lot of people now saying, well, if it's good to limit farm program payments, it's also good to limit conservation payments.
And when will Congress wrap up farm bill work?
We hope that we can have this bill wrapped up by March. Certainly, we'd like to have it done even sooner than that, but we've come a long ways. The president is still saying possibly he would veto this bill, so we've got a lot of work left to do, but I think this is a priority to get this done by this spring.
Jonna Miller, Washington.
USDA continues to work on a commercial model to identify the potential for Asian soybean rust on new crop beans. Marty Draper is director of the National Plant Pathology Program at USDA's Cooperative State Research, Education, and Extension Service.
Because of weather that occurs in the south, in overwintering areas, what we're really concerned is how much inoculum is lasting till next year. So that's the most important thing in determining what the potential for disease is in the coming year. As we start looking at freeze patterns, how does that affect the kudzu that soybean rust is overwintering on? And how wide an area is actually going to have the potential of holding kudzu through the winter? And we're still in the process of analyzing what the effects of that freeze has been.
Draper says the working model was used to notify growers of potential soybean rust outbreaks in 2007, but it is not yet ready for commercial application. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, providing independent commodity and financial analysis to clients throughout the United States. Risk Management Commodities Incorporated has offices located in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. More information is available at 866-837-9027.
For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up, researchers at Illinois are breeding aphid resistance into commercial soybean varieties. I'll have more from the National Soybean Research Laboratory. The soybean aphid has plagued Midwestern fields for more than half a decade. To this point, farmers only had one way to control the insect. It had to be sprayed. Researchers at the University of Illinois have been working on the problem, and they've made quite a bit of progress, says soybean breeder Brian Deers.
So I've been collaborating with Glenn Hartman, who's a USDA pathologist here at the University of Illinois. And through this collaboration, we've identified some resistance genes to soybean aphids. And we've identified these sources of resistance, we've mapped resistance genes, and now we're putting these resistance genes into some adapted soybean varieties.
The U of I USDA collaborators mapped the genes, and then they used genetic markers to help move them around. These markers allowed Illinois plant breeders to quickly identify which crosses carried the aphid resistance gene.
Through traditional breeding that we're able to speed up using genetic markers, we've actually got some experimental lines that we're increasing that carry this aphid resistance gene.
That's right. Grow out of aphid resistant beans has already started. It means farmers in Illinois and around the Midwest will soon have another tool to battle the soybean aphid.
You know, if everything goes well, we could have seed available to farmers by 2009.
The aphid resistant soybeans from the University of Illinois will be made available commercially and through the public sector. Some of the commercial releases will be Roundup ready. Interestingly, researchers, says Brian Deers, do not know how the aphid resistant genes work.
You know, aphids are actually a sucking insect, so basically they go onto the leaves and they suck juice out of the leaves. We don't know exactly why they're resistant. We just know that if you put these aphids on the resistant plants, they don't produce as many offspring or survive as long as if they were on a susceptible.
The researchers believe the genes cause a unique chemical reaction in the soybean plant. That expression limits the ability of the aphid to survive. That's great news. The not-so-good news, say the breeders, is that the little sucking insect has already begun adapting to the change. Apparently, there are variations of the Asian soybean aphid, and some can overcome the resistance the breeders have managed to put into the soon-to-be-released soybeans.
What we've now discovered is that there's actually what's called biotype variation for the aphids in North America, which is something we didn't know anything about a year ago. And we've actually identified that there are some biotypes of the aphids that now can overcome the resistance gene we're working with. And what we've recently done, though, is we've identified a second gene which can control the biotype that overcomes the resistance gene that we've actually developed varieties with.
So, says the U of I crop scientist, the genetic variation in the soybean aphid means plant breeders will need to identify and then develop soybeans with a wide array of resistance.
What we had hoped originally was that there would not be much variation in the aphids in North America, at least initially, that it would take a while before this variation develops. But it's already happening even before we've released a variety that carries the aphid resistance.
That resistance can develop because the aphid is very prolific. The sucking insect can produce more than a dozen generations in a single season. The research done by USDA and the University of Illinois to develop aphid-resistant soybeans is funded in part by the Soybean Checkoff. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
On a Monday afternoon, we always take a look at the cash grain markets with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Greg Johnson.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's talk a little bit about basis and what's been happening and some of the interesting things, if there are anything that's of great interest in the basis and the movements it's made lately.
Yeah, I think with the higher futures prices, farmers are selling corn, and some elevators are selling corn. Commercials are selling corn and beans. Some people maintain that they're doing that to avoid the big margin calls that they have to send to Chicago if they hang on to the physical inventory and keep hedging the grain in the futures market. So maybe some combination of both, but a month ago we saw basis levels at the Gulf for corn at 30 over the March for December and then 42 over the March for January, so a nice 12-cent carry. But today it's the exact same thing, except it's 30 over for January and 42 over for March or for February. So the carry is out there today, but the only way to lock that in is to sell the carry, because if we wait until February, we may be back to 30 over for the nearby and then 42 over for the next month out. So that's one interesting thing. Like I say, I think that's partially because the futures price just keeps working higher and farmers and commercials are selling into this rally.
And what does it all mean for you as you look at it?
Well, you know, I think a lot's going to come a little clearer when the government comes out with its acreage estimate at the end of March. In the short term, we've got the report this Friday.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the dollar has been taking it on the chops. Oil prices are up around $100. So inflation looks to me to be the key word. And if inflation's coming back, I think funds, right or wrong, take some money out of the equities market and put it in commodities, and that's what they did last year, and I think they continue to do that until something, you know, comes along to say that that's not the right thing to do. So corn prices still look like they want to work higher, and bean prices, you know, probably in the short run, dependent upon weather in South America.
And what are the bids for the day there at the Andersons in Champaign County?
Cash corn, $4.49, new crop corn, $4.56, cash beans, $12 even, new crop, $11.22, cash wheat, $8.73, new crop, $7.44.
Greg, thanks much.
Thanks, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with the Andersons in Champaign County. Somebody from that office joins us each and every Monday afternoon to take a look at the cash grain market. In 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast for the two-state region, the Midwest, the nation, and the globe. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. President Bush is threatening to veto anything that Congress does that weakens the No Child Left Behind Act. The president visited a Chicago school today where he made his statement. The top Democratic and Republican on the Senate Education Committee both aren't talking about weakening the law. They've said they would put off rewriting the six-year-old law until next year. The law requires math and reading tests in grades 3 through 8 and once in high school. Schools that miss testing benchmarks face increasingly stiff sanctions. The visit today was to Chicago's Horace Greeley School, which was named a Blue Ribbon School under the program in October, one of just 12 public schools in the state and 239 across the country. Governor Rob Blagojevich says he's cautiously optimistic that lawmakers will come up with permanent funding for the Chicago area public transit system when they meet this week. There are 13 days to go until the Chicago Transit Authority's so-called doomsday deadline forces the agency to cut service and increase fares. The clerk in Champaign County hopes to see more people wake up to the fact that the primary is early this year. Tomorrow's the deadline to register to vote for the February 5th primary. Clerk Mark Sheldon says his office has been quiet up to now. He says many people may not have paid attention to the political process over the holiday season, and he says the start of early voting next week may mark an increase in interest in the primary, despite a lack of local contests. Officials with the FutureGen project make their first visit to Mattoon since the city won the $1.8 billion power plant project. The meetings tomorrow will mark the start of a joint planning project for the plant, which promises to cut down on pollution by sequestering carbon dioxide underground. FutureGen has also received criticism for its rising price tag. The city of Champaign wants to do something more productive with its 90-acre former landfill site on the far northwest side. A meeting tomorrow night will let residents help plan the future use of the site. The city and the Champaign Park District are proposing a lease to the park district. Some of the uses suggested range from a golf course to a BMX bike course to nature trails. A model airplane club is currently the only tenant. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
And I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture, inviting you to visit our website, willag.org. There you'll find a calendar of events. And if you look on this week, it is just chock full. On Wednesday and Thursday of this week, I'll host the Crop Protection Technology Conference in the Illini Union all day Wednesday and a good portion of the day on Thursday. Dave Dickey will be out and about across the two-state region tonight. He'll be in Clifton at the Central Citizens Library District and tomorrow at the Sharon United Methodist Church in Decatur, in Lafayette, Indiana at the University Inn on the 10th. Which I believe is Wednesday. That's Thursday night. And the next week in Pontiac at the Elks Club, all of those will be the AM 580 Ag panels, your opportunity to catch up on some questions if you have them for some of the really good analysts that we have here that we'll call them on staff for the WILL Ag Service. But they will be available to answer your questions. Dave Dickey will take the show on the road a good portion of this week and next week, and I'll be on the road next week, too, at the Corn and Soybean Classic Series all across the state. Check out the U of I Extension websites for information on that one and the Crop Protection Technology Conference and the Will Ag website for the latest information on where Dave and those ag panels will be. Right now, time to take a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather. Maybe it's not quite as busy as we are. We'll find out. Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, is with us this afternoon. Hi, Mark.
Hello there, Todd.
Boy, we have a lot of traveling to do this week and then next week, and I'm wondering across the state of Illinois whether we'll have decent weather for most of it or not.
Well, what's your definition of decent weather, Todd?
As long as I don't have snow and ice, I don't care how cold it gets.
Well, there you go. No need to worry about any kind of frozen precipitation here across much of Illinois, I guess with the exception of the far northern areas coming up tomorrow night and then again on into later this week, Thursday night. But even across those areas, your snowfall totals are not going to be all that much, on the order of, you know, maybe an inch or two at the most. The one thing that is for sure is that we're going to be ending this highly anomalous warmth, i.e. record-breaking, even historic heat, what we call a January heat wave, now going on across the whole eastern half of the country. So that is actually going to be coming to an end here tomorrow as frontal passage takes place. But even beyond that front, temperatures are still going to be warmer than average here. So good traveling conditions with maybe some showers and thunderstorms there tomorrow across, later today and on tomorrow, across much of Illinois, let alone much of the Midwest.
In our part of the world, we usually call this a January thaw, but we don't get to 66 degrees in a January thaw normally, do we?
Not really. And, this is a major thawing taking place right now, and obviously you're seeing our snow melt occur here, and you're talking, well, up in Chicago, we're basically reaching 65 here, which is matching, at least at O'Hare, the all-time record warmest January temperature ever recorded over the past several decades here, and obviously that's not only felt here, but across really the whole central and eastern U.S. with these temperatures running, you know, as much as 30, even 35 degrees above normal. Pretty dramatic. Obviously, when you're being a meteorologist, this is even more impressive here than most others would think.
and very quickly, what are these high temperatures courtesy from?
Well, it's really due to a strong ridge of high pressure, which is across the eastern half of the country, with actually the greatest anomalies up north into eastern Canada. But with this ridging and with a very strong jet stream actually on the periphery of the ridge, it's allowing very warm temperatures to not only kind of develop across the Midwest, but also advect from areas such as, you know, the Gulf of Mexico, the southern U.S., even further south. This is definitely a more tropical air mass here that's prevailed, and as a result, that's why we're seeing record warmth.
Tropical and winter in Illinois. Those are two things that generally don't happen. Mark Russo, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure there, Todd.
Yep. Mark Russo is with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. He joins us on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Monday afternoon. Thanks for being along with us. We'll talk with you again tomorrow afternoon.